Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
And here we sit at another beautiful, beautiful Thursday evening in gorgeous Southern California. And the mean temperature today in Simi Valley was lightly windy, sunny, and 85 degrees. So I just love saying that because it's just so cool.
That's also the description of my personality.
That's right. 85 degrees.
And just a little damp.
This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host in studio tonight with the lovely and effervescent Russ Avison.
Here I am.
Here you am.
Thank you. And you get me so excited every time you introduce me.
Well, thank you.
I think I peed a little bit.
And you know, oh, did you? Oh.
Yes.
Don't say that because you make me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we on the air?
Yes. You just got back from Alaska.
I did. And I'm leaving back to go tonight again, I think. No, it was an amazing trip.
Oh, man, you asshole.
But yeah, it was so good. But, you know, I do have to say something that was really impressive to me is that I had a chance to get actually a private tour of one of these mushing places where they actually breed and train the mush dogs. Yeah,
yes.
The sled dogs. And for the Iditarod.
Uh-huh.
And there has been so much negative press. Especially when if you listen to PETA. You know,
well, yeah.
Okay.
They say these dogs
are mistreated and they're abused. I will tell you, I work with dogs. And I've been doing that for 20 years. And I will tell you, these dogs are happy. They're well cared for. They're well loved. And they love the crap out of running on this.
Yes.
There was no snow yet. In fact, it didn't snow until the day we left.
But they practice on wheels, don't they?
They do. They have a little four-wheel ATV,
and they
hook them all up to the line, and they take them out, and they mush them on dry land.
Oh, cool.
And I'll tell you, those dogs go ape. They're like, pick me, pick me, pick me. And as soon as the thing takes off, the rest of the dogs quiet right down because I guess I didn't get to go. So they relax.
Oh.
But it was an amazing trip.
Well, good.
Alaska is
a
beautiful state.
I'm glad. And I always get a text from Russ when he's gone because I think he likes to rub it in.
I do.
You know, I need a neener. I'm here and you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what else is funny? I was just going to tell you. The people up there, they always refer to the rest of the United States, the lower 48.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They don't talk about going to California. Well, when I go down to the lower 48, that's just kind of interesting.
Well, yeah. It's like when we were in Vietnam, you go back to the world.
Mm.
So, yeah, we were talking about Bella at one time about a month ago.
Okay.
About her rear end scratching problem.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, this is what's happened. I took your advice,
uh-huh.
and she started coming over to me, and she just slams her butt on me now. She's, uh-huh. you know, and I say, I just sit back and I say, you
and
know
she's
what?
She's not the only one.
She is. I say, look, I did not invite you.
Mm-hmm.
Go away. So, she drops her head, and she walks over to Mom, and she looks at Mom, and Mom says, well?
Mm-hmm.
So finally, now when I say, Bella, would you like Daddy to scratch your butt? Boom, she's there.
But otherwise, she doesn't bother you.
She'll start, but then and I say, no, not time, and she'll go away.
Try not even saying anything. Try just when she does it, just put your hands up near her, don't even look at her, and just wait until she walks away.
Okay.
And
cool.
You'll see it.
Cool.
But I'm glad it's working.
It is working. That's because you're a magic man.
I am.
Yeah, Heart wrote a song about you. the Writer's Block.
That's actually true.
I know, huh? The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books, and we are there in the market for new writers and writers who are not really sure what to do with their manuscripts or how to format them, get them edited, get them proofread, get them to the market. And that's what Black Dog and Tuscany Bay is all about. If you are interested in finding out part of the program, and it's not real expensive, the number you can call is 805-795-3165, or you can get a hold of me. It's J. Christina at Tuscany Bay Books, or R. Polinelli, that's P-A-O-N-I-L-L-I-N-I, at Tuscany Bay Books, and we'll be more than happy to give you the program and talk to you about what you want and what your needs are. And also by Out West, which is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. If you're interested in getting a hold of Out West, their online website is www.scvoutwest.com. Their number, toll-free, is 877-340-9378. And if you're local and you're interested in going to see their concert series, and they only have two shows left this month, well, actually tomorrow night, or no, they moved it to Sunday, or Saturday. So Saturday night this week. I don't know who the guest is. Hopefully Bobby Jean maybe call in and tell us who the guest is. But the concert series tickets are $25. And if you tell them that you heard it here on the Writer's Block, they drop to $20. Or if you have a whole bunch of people, maybe even a little bit less. The direct number there is 661-347-9700. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service. TFM Truckload, that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski. Tell him you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call 888-653-1323.
I'm sorry, what was that little pause?
I know. it was a water thing. 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Okay, let's move on. We got kind of a really cool lady on the hook tonight, and she is from Alberta. Oh, no, she's out Ontario. Let's see where she's from. Alberta, Calgary. And her name is Susie. What is it? I know
Vidori.
Vidori. Uh-huh. Susie Vidori. And she's had a long career building companies, which lends her a unique perspective in the literary world. Susie lives in Calgary, Canada, with her husband, three children, and is an involved community member. I'm sure she probably has a disgruntled or a confused dog in there somewhere. Currently, she is the program manager for the Young Adult Children's Programming for When Words Collide, WWC, a literary festival held in Calgary annually in August, which would have been last month, I guess, huh? So let's do her a big round of applause for the Writer's Block, and let's bring her on. Susie, you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening.
Hey, Susie. Nice to have you on with us.
Yes, thanks very much for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thanks for giving up your time to come on the air with two idiots.
Yes, Susie.
Well,
Susie,
talking books is what I would choose to do with my time, so it's perfect.
Oh, cool!
But
right,
really,
I
something more important than books. Are you a Flames fan?
Not really.
Are you a hockey
we're
fan?
We're definitely hockey fans.
Okay,
we're actually Penguins fans.
Oh, that's okay. I just want to make sure you're a hockey fan.
Oh, definitely hockey fans. Yes,
hockey fan. Yes,
a hockey fan.
Yes,
a hockey
fan. Yes. Oh, very good. No, because I play hockey. I love hockey. So.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got actually, my son plays hockey, and my two girls play ringette, which is probably a game that you don't know about.
I don't. No.
Because it's Canadian, but it's
Splane, Lucy.
Kind of like hockey for girls, but it's played with a stick and a ring, and it's on skates. And yeah, so. Completely different game, different rules, much more team-oriented than hockey, but lots of girls play it up here.
Excellent.
Girls right. play hockey, too.
You just moved, by the way, you just moved up to the top of my list
yeah,
of cool people now.
You did. You did.
Sweet.
Russ is a total hockeyite.
Yes. I'm a hockey puck.
There you go. Well, I spend a lot of time in the rinks, and I've learned I don't play hockey, and I kind of grew up skating, but not very well, so there you go.
Wow. Okay. First of all, I have to know, do you have a slightly confused dog at home as well?
I totally don't. I heard you say that. I don't have a dog. I don't have any time in my life right now to have a dog.
Oh, well, they do take time. In fact, you heard us talking about my dog, Bella.
Yeah.
Well, Russ helped me. Well, actually, Russ trained me, and then I, you know, we worked with the dog.
But Jim follows directions pretty well.
I don't do badly, do I?
No, Bella goes off, sits in the corner, and looks at him and says, let me know when you get it together, and I'll do what you want.
Yeah, when you figure it out, Pop, let me know.
Yeah.
Okay. Russ and I both read your book, The Fountain. And, golly, I don't know that I can say anything bad about it. It was a pretty interesting story.
Good.
Where did it come from?
The concept of the fountain has really been kicking around with me since, I don't know, my tweens, and I'm much older than that now. I think that I always wanted to write a boarding school novel, so I love writing for teens and young adults, and so I started lots of boarding school novels when I was in middle school myself, and I never finished them. So that piece of it, the sneaking in and out of each other's dorm rooms at night and being away and doing whatever the heck you want, that piece has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual idea of the fountain came much later when I sat down to finally write it, about 5 years ago now, maybe six.
Mm-hmm.
And it really came from the way that the world is changing and being a parent. I don't know if you guys are parents, but you could really... Kids these days are very advantaged, and they are given a lot. And we as parents, it's really hard because you want to give them everything that they want, but, you know, I don't feel like we got that growing up, did we? I don't know.
I didn't.
So the concept, the sort of kernel around the fountain came from, what if kids could have everything that they wanted? Wouldn't that be just chaos? So having a school where there's a fountain that grants wishes... really was about somebody good intentionally giving the kids what they want, but then it being used for very different purposes, mm-hmm. and not understanding the consequences. So
yeah.
That was sort of how it came to be, and the series contains quite a number of wishes, mm-hmm. all of which cancel each other out or change the whole timeline, and so it was a lot of fun. It was a really tricky plot to write, and The Fountain is book one of that. And The Westwoods actually just came out on September 22nd, and it is book two.
Right.
Well, one thing that was interesting, though, is your protagonist, Ava, she didn't really know what the fountain was because, you know, you learn through the story, and I don't want to give too much away, but you learn that there are certain kids that are given access to the fountain because of certain circumstances in their life. But Ava kind of comes across it differently, and that made it even more interesting to just to follow the story, because you're all along you're trying to figure out how did this come into play.
Right.
Absolutely, and I think that's what's really neat, because every wish can be different or be very dull. So yeah, there's two different ways that you could come across the fountain. You could come across it and just happen to throw a penny in or a coin in her case, and I think that most of us have actually done that at some point in our lives, and you might or might not really expect it to come true. I guess it depends on the wish. You certainly wouldn't expect something with wide sweeping changes to come true immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really neat. And then there are kids in the series as well that do encounter the fountain and know that or hope that their wish is going to come true.
Mm-hmm.
And so they treat the fountain very differently, mm-hmm. In the series.
Yeah, what intrigued me is that, without giving away any plot twists or anything, the fountain itself doesn't show itself to everyone, apparently, as Russ has said, but there are some people that can see it repeatedly. Now, Ava tried to see it again, but she couldn't.
Mm-hmm. You only ever get one wish,
uh-huh.
So there's... For those who've seen it before or have used the fountain, it doesn't appear again. But for those who have never made a wish, they may see it again.
Oh, see, I didn't get that. Of course, I'm a little slow, but hey.
A lot slow.
There's more, I mean, and I'll have to be careful here. It's not really a spoiler, but it is part of the magic system.
Yeah. I actually have to tell you that as I was reading this book, I got to probably about in the middle of it, and I thought to myself, this book is for like young adults. It's for like teenagers. and I finished it, and then I read your bio, and I thought, oh, geez, it is for young adults.
Well, I think the conclusion of the book also, the conclusion was very much young adult.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Because honestly, Susie, I have to tell you, there were one or two times when Ava was with, you know, Ethan or I forgot the other boyfriend.
Lucas.
Yeah.
And there were times when I was hoping, come on, let's notch it up just a little bit. Yeah. Let's ratchet this up. I'd like to see this romance blossom in a more physical manner, but it didn't, of course.
Well, no, she's only like 15.
Yeah, she's 16 in this book, but
really, it would have been illegal.
I mean,
then.
I have readers of all ages, and I have a mom, and I'm an executive in my day job, so I've got to be careful a little bit what I write. And I think that's part of the marker of young adult, at least in the age group that I write for, mm-hmm. Which is sort of the younger young adult. Mm-hmm. It's not the upper YA that can kind of go there with those other sexier scenes.
Sure.
And thank you for reading a young adult novel. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
And I also have to thank you so much for putting it in a typeface that even blind people could read.
Awesome. Well, you can thank my publisher.
We will.
In the hard copy, how many pages is it actually?
The Fountain is 265.
Okay.
It was over 700
pages in your PDF.
on the PDF.
Was it too long?
No.
But when you read it, here's the thing. And I agree with Jim. The larger type made it really easy to read. Because we both read it on our... He wrote it on a computer. I read it on my e-reader.
Desktop, yeah.
But as you go through, it was... I was figuring it was about 3 or 4 seconds per page.
Because
it was only like 1.5 paragraphs per page.
Yes.
So you go pretty fast.
Take a look at what they actually sent you. Because I don't know. I know that the Kindle version doesn't look like that. So I'm not sure. But yeah, it's actually been... The Fountain's been published in two different formats. It's had a second edition. So the first edition was only 206 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It was a larger book format.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to a smaller size because what we found was some of the older teens would be like, well, I want a longer book.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because they're used to sort of the paper, the trade paperback, which is a little bit smaller.
Sure.
So we went to that, and then it became 265, even though it's the same.
And they, all those young people, they all have good eyes, so you can make little type, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all have good eyes.
And then you get us blind old guys, we, you know, can't see across the street.
So
yeah,
I do get
a lot of adult readers as well. But what's interesting was The Fountain was actually nominated. It was a finalist for an Aurora Award last year, which is a Canadian Science Fiction and Fantasy Award.
Wow.
In Canada. And so I actually had, because the Canadian Science Fiction and Fantasy Association is largely, older, and I would have older men coming and discussing and wanting to discuss the romantic elements of the plot, which is really cool. So I think it's a book
it's a little
that,
creepy.
Yes, it's written for
I was just going to say. There's
yeah,
a reason older
kind
guys
want
to.
It's kind of fun.
But I said it was a little creepy that these older guys are wanting to discuss the romantic aspects of it.
Yeah. From a purely literary perspective.
Okay.
That's what they led you to believe.
I didn't mean it was creepy. They were really interested in the plot and how it was built, so it was kind of fun.
Well, you know, Jim and I were talking earlier, before we came on, that the part that intrigued me, I have always been fascinated with any kind of book that involves time travel,
right.
Or is in this case, you know, you're in one reality and suddenly it shifts, and mm-hmm. that's what drew me in, and I was fascinated with that, and all I was looking for is, okay, what else is different, what's changed, and there was a scene where one of the characters reveals themselves where you think they don't exist anymore, and you're like, wow, that really grabbed me.
Yeah, so it's really tricky. I'm an operations professional in my day job, and so the math part of it, I really like piecing it all back together.
Uh-huh.
And the timeline, the alternate timeline piece, is was really tricky to write. And I actually ended up working with an editor who does nothing but time travel stories.
Oh, wow.
Just to make sure, and so got some perspective, because it's hard to keep everything straight. The Fountain in the series actually has unlimited powers, and so that's something that most editors don't like. They want your magic system to have a limit, and it wouldn't be any fun if it was, you know, if you made a big wish and it didn't come true, and you made a small wish and it did come true. So, but yeah, in this case, Ava's wish actually rewrites history.
Oh yeah, that was a part that made it really exciting. And I have to ask you, where did the name for this the Miss Crick?
Yeah,
just her name. It was like Nurse Ratchet. You know, it just stuck out there, and you thought, this is an evil woman.
I tried a bunch of names on for her. And I think that it just it had to be one syllable. It was almost like a, you know, she's been likened to Professor Snape or something in Harry Potter. And that wasn't the intent, but I think I was looking for something that sounded awful.
Well, you hit it.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. And I actually had an English teacher in ninth grade that was the same.
Really?
Oh, she was horrible. Her name was Miss Reyes. Oh, she was terrible.
Her name isn't as good, right?
No, that's
Hope she's
the
not
thing.
Listening.
No, yeah. Well, I think she's probably dead now.
Oh. Well, see what happens when you teach Jim.
I know. That's what happened.
Yeah,
1964?
63?
Yeah.
Okay. I was very young then.
Yeah, you were.
Miss Crick is one of the characters that people really were drawn to, and she actually makes a huge appearance in the West Woods. You find out a lot more about her and what her pursuit at the fountain is all about.
I was kind of wondering, and you never really got much into the reasoning behind her sneaking out at night and going places, and you never really figured out what's going on with her. And I was hoping that your next book was going to kind of outline that.
Yeah, it's a series. You can't give it all away in the first book, right?
Well, I'm not going to. Yeah. I mean, now I need to get the second book.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite scenes, and one that I do a lot with readings with the Westwoods, book two, is when the characters actually go to Ms. Crick's apartment and what that looks like, because it's really crazy. She's a hoarder.
That makes sense.
Yeah, she has a pet owl. I mean, it was a lot of fun to write because she really became, you know, such an interesting character that people asked over and over again, like, what is with her? So that was a lot of fun.
Now, I was also curious because it didn't take me as long as it did Jim to figure out that it was a young adult novel. but I was probably
warning on those things.
I know.
But I did realize it probably within, well, maybe the first 100 of our pages, which is probably about 30 or 40. But what I did want to ask you is, how do you get your frame of reference to make it appeal to the young people? Because, I mean, to me, as I was reading, I said, these are young kids.
Right.
They were all teenagers, and I didn't know that right at first. I actually thought it was maybe like a college prep.
Freshman college, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But as I read through it, their characters, the things they did, the things they said, I felt like I was really watching this group of teenagers. And how do you, you know, because you're an adult, you're a mom, how do you get that reference?
You know, I remember. And I think if you talk to a lot of writers, they really experience the world in a different way, which is what drives us to write. But I remember exactly what it was like to be a teenager. And you know, it's changed for sure. Mm-hmm. But I have young people in my house. My oldest is now 11, so not quite teen. I don't know, I'm just drawn to everything. I read a lot of teen. I watch a lot of teen drama. I really try to stay on top of the genre and stay with the pulse. For the Westwoods, I actually had 10 beta readers that were teens. So between, I think the youngest was 11, and that was my daughter, and the oldest was 16. So, you know, you get their feedback, and you really try to make it, and you listen to what they're responding to and what they aren't. And they can't always articulate it, but if they tell you they don't like a scene and you kind of probe why, it might be because it's not realistic, right?
That actually makes a lot of sense. Oh, let me give this number out in case anybody actually really wants to call you and talk to you. If anybody wants to call and talk to Susie Vidori this evening, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And we're talking with Susie Vidori, a great writer, actually, young adult fiction from Calgary in Alberta, Canada.
Yeah. Hey, now you completed this book how long ago, the first one, The Fountain?
That book I actually completed, like, started trying to find a publisher for probably 4 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
And it took me about 2 years to find a publisher.
Okay.
And then The Westwoods, it took me about a year to write.
Did you already have the second book in mind as you were writing the first one, or did you wait to see what happened before you decided, okay, now I've got a series I can go with?
Good question.
Well, yes, both. it was always intended to be a trilogy, and I always I always wanted to sort of write them out of order. And so The Fountain takes place, it's the story of Ava who goes to the boarding school to find out more about her mom who died when she was 10, and she gets there and she makes a wish and she wishes that someone who hadn't been nice to her would disappear. Well, the number one question that I got, besides Miss Crick, there was a character that people liked even more, and that was Courtney, who got wished away in the story.
Right,
and people
said, right.
What is with her? I've been touted as being able to write the meanest villain on the planet, which some people really like.
You did well.
Other people... Pardon?
You did well. I wanted to strangle her.
Yeah. And you kind of have to, otherwise you don't like Ava for having wished her away, right?
Right.
So, you know, I worked hard at making her awful. Not everybody likes that because it can be likened to a mean girl or something. But that wasn't the intent because Courtney actually has a story. So I always intended to give Courtney her own book. So The Westwoods is actually the prequel to The Fountain, and it happens the year before.
Oh,
and
okay.
Even it at all. And it's Courtney's journey and her experiences with the magic of the school and her journey from being a regular kid to being the person that you meet in The Fountain.
Gotcha.
But I think if you knew that and you had that whole backstory, you would feel so sorry for her for getting wished away that you wouldn't enjoy The Fountain.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Okay, because at the end of The Fountain, I mean, all the changes that have occurred are there. It's
They're not going back.
Yeah, so you see this Courtney that you don't like, and then... later on you find out
maybe she's okay. Yeah,
you get a glimpse. And I think, you know, it's interesting, the reactions are mixed on the Westwoods in terms of people like the book, but they still don't always like Courtney, even though it's her story. But she had to end up as the girl that you meet in The Fountain, so you didn't really have a choice. You kind of write yourself into a box.
There you go.
Turned dark.
Let's talk about your publisher for a minute. You said it took you 2 years to find a publisher. Why was that?
I think it's a long process, and I was very new to the industry, so The Fountain is my first published book. So, as you mentioned in my bio, I'm involved with a group here called When Words Collide, which is a festival for readers and writers.
Right.
And I got involved when I finished The Fountain, and I wanted to get involved in the literary community, and I didn't really find a young adult community in Alberta.
Uh-huh.
And so I created one, and now we have a very strong one.
It's
fun. But it's a multi-genre... It's a multi-genre festival, but there really wasn't a huge young adult component. They used to have about 3 hours at the festival of programming, and now we have 30.
Wow.
It's a pretty cool group. But I met quite a number of publishers at the first festival that I went to, including Penguin and, you know, some big ones and then some other smaller ones.
Uh-huh.
And I got myself psyched up and went to pitch this novel, and all my new writer friends were trying to coach me on how to pitch. And so I went into these pitches, and I pitched four of the ones that did young adult that were coming to the conference, and I got four yeses. And so I came out of there going, okay. And they were all like, well, how did you do that? I was like, oh, well, I actually know how to pitch. I don't know if I know how to write. But I know how to pitch.
Interesting.
Because,
okay.
You know, they didn't read your writing. They just talked to you about the story.
Sure.
And they were like, yeah, we'll take a look. So I spent some time with some of the larger publishers, and it got pretty far. You know, did some iterations and whatnot, but didn't end up getting a contract out of that. And so out of that, I got some great editing, some great feedback, and The Fountain was really ready to go. And then I was offered a contract by a medium-sized publisher. And they were going to publish The Fountain, like, in 2.5 years or something. And they said, you know, if I were you, you're ready now, go do it now. The book's ready now, go do it now. So I actually ended up publishing with Evil Alter Ego Press. I think they've published 8 books now, all in young adult, but they're very new, very small publisher, and that was the perfect fit for me at the time because they helped me out with a lot of things, and I helped them out with a lot of things, too. So it's been a really fun way to publish because I build businesses in my day job, and so to get really involved and to learn everything from the ground up was really cool, but not going the self-publishing route, having, you know, some roots behind you and having some support behind you really helped.
Sure. And you opted to do all this without an agent.
Yeah, you know, agency in Canada is a little bit different. It's very uncommon to get an agent in Canada. Mm-hmm. I do know some people with them, but most people that I know don't have them. You still do need an agent to pitch to Big Five, but mm-hmm. any other level of publishing, you don't.
Huh. And then you get to keep more of the money yourself.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
You get to keep more of the money yourself that way, too.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, agents provide a great service, too, and I think... You know, I'm writing, in the future, I'm writing a series for Upper YA. It's a little bit more fantastical than this series. And I think at that point, I really hope that I'll be able to work with an agent.
Uh-huh. Well, and you know, but it also requires a lot of self...
promotion.
Poof! Exact. Thank you so much. Self-promotion. and shameless self-promotion, actually.
Which you're an expert at.
Try.
Who, me?
Yes,
yeah,
you, Jim.
I'm actually pretty good at it. I do it every week.
It is
week
a
here
lot of promotion.
There you go.
You do need to figure out, you know, what your strengths are
right.
and what you're able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Young adults are really hard to promote to. They're not in the traditional places. So Instagram is big and the blogging community is big.
Right.
So, you know, I spent a lot of time building relationships with The Fountain. And then when the Westwoods launched, I was able to call up 30 bloggers and say, hey, you love The Fountain, would you read the Westwoods? And so that was really neat, but it takes time to be able to do that. So I'm able to launch book two with a lot more oomph behind it and
uh-huh.
hopefully reach, I mean, in less than a week into it. So with a lot more oomph behind it, but we'll see.
Well, good on you. You're a working mom. You have three kids. Where do you find time to write?
Oh, my goodness. That's a very common question. You know, I write in the evenings. Sometimes I skip sleep. I have a really supportive family, a really supportive husband, very excited kids that would love me, for me to be the next J.K. Rowling. I keep saying nobody is the next J.K. Rowling. I think that was a one-time deal. But, yeah, they're really supportive. I go in waves. When I'm writing something, I tend to make a schedule and just fit it in where I can, write an hour here or there and just get it done.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, sometimes when the stories are burning, and it's right there on the tip of my fingers,
yeah.
I'll take whole days on the weekend and just binge write.
Wow. I can't sit and write that long. I can't do it.
Oh, I could.
A couple hours,
maybe.
Like,
I can go to a coffee shop at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 1 o'clock I get hungry, and I move to the pub next door and keep going. I write at home, too. I edit at home. I tend to do first drafts somewhere else, somewhere noisy, and I can write first drafts. I could sit there for 12 hours.
So wow. Let me ask
you. But editing is harder in public.
Yeah.
How similar is the final product to your original first draft?
Oh, good question.
Yeah, really good question. I think because I had worked with several different editors and several different publishers in the beginning to try to get the Fountain, at least, to fruition, there were some big changes. I think, and I'm trying to think back, I think one of the biggest changes that one of the editors had wanted was to make it from, it takes place over about 3 months, so September to Christmas type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or September to Thanksgiving, but the original draft was September to Christmas. And he said, you got to make this book happen in 3 weeks.
Really?
And I went, okay, well, that's not a small change, right? Because you have to change, I mean, depends on your book, but there's a snowstorm, there's a homecoming,
right.
there's the first day of school.
Right.
There's that have to happen that don't really work if you have it happen over 3 weeks.
What was their thinking as far as why you should have it happen in 3 weeks?
Yeah, so one of the markers of young adult is actually that it is action-packed and you never stop. So it's like boom, 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 and you can't have a lull. So you can't say in 3 weeks later. And, you know, so there was a bit of a lull there. So what I ended up doing was I couldn't move some of the events, but I had to think really hard about how to fill that time to make that action keep going and how to sort of space it out a little bit differently. And so I ended up putting in a lot more elements that were not originally there between sort of the homecoming and the snowstorm, if you would.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And then they pulled the snowstorm forward pretty early. I did some research. I actually grew up in the Boston area, or went to elementary school there, and that's why it's set in the woods in New England there, because every time I sat down to write, that's just, I mean, the woods don't look like that here. They're very different.
Mm.
So he ended up setting it there, but I was doing some research. I'm like, it doesn't usually snow in November there, but it did once, so okay.
So it can again. But, you know, I also noticed that all the scenes that you have, you know, you talked about having nonstop action.
Right.
And if you think about, you know, you talk about the homecoming, there's the football game. Mm-hmm. There are the scenes where Ava is home with her granny
and
her aunt, you know, comes in and sees her. And these are all, like, I could relate to them only because they're all kind of memories of that time of my life. They were the things that stood out to me.
Right.
So I could see where that keeps their interest.
Right, right.
Yeah, you have to keep it. And it's funny because sometimes when they get adults that don't read a lot of young adult, like I said, last year when it was nominated for an award, I had people reading it that weren't really young adult readers, and they would say, well, you need to give a breather, you know, like, just like, I couldn't put it down, but I also was like, oh my goodness, I'm exhausted. But it really is a marker of the of today's teen, that if you have that lull or if you have that break and you give them, like, in an adult novel that you read, and I enjoy reading those also, you do have those moments of reflection, and a teen will put the book down.
So, yeah.
You're not allowed to have them.
Well, you know, if you think about the films, like the superhero films,
right?
They're just nonstop action.
Right.
That's all they do is keep going and going and going. And they are somewhat exhausting, but they're very satisfying.
Yeah, they're very tiring to watch.
And your book, I do feel that, and I did read it in a short period of time because I had to.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't feel that. Like, I wasn't pushing myself to read it. It just flowed easily, and I wanted to keep going. So it had a good pace to it for me.
It did have a good pace. And I was going to ask you about when you're writing for let me preface this question by asking you this: how long have you been writing in any type of situation, prose?
My whole
term
life.
Papers.
My whole life, but not novels.
Okay.
In my professional career, I do a lot of business writing as well.
Okay. So writing for young adults, and I've never done that. I've never written for young adults because
he hates kids.
Most parents don't want to. Most parents don't want to give their kids one of my books because
they're a little above what kids.
Well, actually, they're extremely realistic. So yeah. Anyway. There has to be a trick to writing for young adults, other than for writing for adults, because adults are a lot easier to tell the story to. I think the attention span of a young adult is very short, so you have to write in spurts where they're going to keep their attention for a chapter at a time. Okay.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
You got it. It is. And I think, you know, what I like to like in my writing, but you can't write down to them either.
No.
And I think some people make the mistake of trying to write a young adult book and making the language simpler or something else, and I've never done that. You know, I think it's easy reading in that you create prose that flows nicely, and I don't, you know, make it difficult to understand necessarily. But you can't talk down to them. I love shows like The Gilmore Girls, where they talk a mile a minute and keep going and keep going. And I've been told The Fountain, one of the things that editors really liked about it was they said, wow, it's like a really intellectual voice. So it's almost, you know, these bookish characters that are quite well-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Versus sometimes you try to do a character voice that's much younger.
Sure. Sure.
So, yeah, I don't know what the trick is.
Just really quick, completely off the book for a minute, you said that you do a lot of business writing. What is your day job, if you don't mind sharing?
I actually work in operations. So I manage operations for a manufacturing company.
Oh.
And I've done that for quite a number of years. And previous to that, I was in technology. So a lot of technical writing, grant mm-hmm. writing, describing financials or business case type writing. So very logical.
Logical and and very thoughtful.
Yeah, thoughtful and very precise, but yet usually trying to win an argument or trying to, you know, present a case. So yeah.
Sure.
That's what I do. Kind of makes sense, right?
Have you ever had writer's block?
You know, I actually was listening to some of your shows. I love your show, and I know that you asked this question. I wouldn't say that I have writer's block, but I don't generally sit down to write until it's all fully formed in my head.
Uh-huh.
I might carry it around for a day, a week, a month, and then when it's there, I have to write it.
Uh-huh.
When it's ready, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I haven't experienced writer's block because I've never given myself the latitude to say, okay, every day I'm going to get up and, you know, not go to work and write. I think that would be very difficult.
Yeah.
And then I would probably experience it. But no, I haven't ever really experienced it because there's so many other aspects to writing that when you have promotion to do and you have editing to do and you have writing to do, it's not all about the first draft.
Right.
Which is where I think you would come into that.
Well,
sometimes I don't have it fully formed and I have to think about it for a while. But I don't call it writer's block. I just move on and do something different.
Oh, okay. How do you know? Because what I'm gathering from what you just said is that you'll take, let's say, a particular scene in your book, and you'll have it kind of running around in your head, and you'll kind of play it, well, are they going to do it this way? Are we going to set it here? How's the dialogue going to go? How do you know when it's ready, like you say, okay, now I have to put it on paper? You've carried around for a little while. How do you know when that spark is right and I'm putting it to paper?
Yeah, I think usually when I stop writing, it's because I've not solved something. And as you guys said, the plot's kind of tricky. So I start with an outline, but it doesn't always work, and you don't always have all the details. I mean, you have an outline of a paragraph per chapter, and sometimes I sit down to write it, and there's only a paragraph of information that I've thought of, and I can't think of anything
right,
else.
Right.
So you got to kind of go and add to it. And when you have enough sort of thoughts in your head that you can't keep them straight anymore, you better write them down or they're going to be gone. I don't know. More of an art than a science.
I would agree.
Well, and I'm sure it's different for every writer.
I mean,
you know, just like anything else, everybody has their own process to get to where they have to be.
Sure.
So, and yeah, as you
I don't
can tell,
like anybody I know,
and you can tell I'm not a writer. So, Jim, yes,
but he's a good question asker.
I like to call myself a quilter, and I've talked about this a lot because it's a process that doesn't really marry with any other writers that I know. I have heard of quilters before. I didn't coin the term, but basically I do have an outline, but because I write in sporadic fits and bursts and when I can fit it in, I'll pick a scene that I feel like writing at the time. And so then I have to quilt it all back together. So if I'm like super cranky and all I want to do is write about
Courtney,
you know, the horrible characters or a scene where they're fighting,
right,
then I'll do that. And it doesn't matter if it's the last scene or the first scene or right in the middle. And then I kind of have them all. And then when I go to put them back together, there's a lot of smoothing and sort of weaving back together. And that's where you come up with, especially when you have an alternate timeline, you have to go back through and make sure you didn't miss anything. But
Jim,
it's not efficient.
When you write, Jim, do you write in order of how the book's going to flow?
I have the story outlined in my head. I know the start and I know the ending.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of know where things are going in the center.
But do you ever do it like she does?
I do take scenes that pop in that are really good, so I write them down, and then I plug and play them where I need to stick them in.
Okay.
Sure.
Good.
All writers do that.
Oh, okay.
At least the ones that I've talked to, and geez, we talked to enough of them.
Yes.
Well, look, we've got to sit here and roll this along a little bit here for you, so I'm going to ask you a couple other questions, and then I'm going to say goodnight.
All right.
Okay, then. The other question I had to ask you, when you go to your shameless self-promotion, how do you exactly self-promote yourself? What do you do?
You mean, okay.
What do you do for promotion?
I love to do public speaking or appearances, so I love showing up, whether that's at events or book signings. I do a lot of things in person, school visits, just being where the readers are and being able to talk to them, I find is really effective. I am on every form of social media that I know of, and I really try to stay relevant. It's difficult. The teens, that's where they are. And those are the two things that I really focus on the most are, you know, in person and social media.
Well, sure, that's your audience. Teens.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now.
Exactly.
Have you ever thought about writing an adult novel?
I have. I actually had one that I was writing at the same time that I was trying to sell The Fountain. And I had intended, and of course, if you write for young adults and then you write for adults, you have to have a few different personas or a few different names,
right?
Because you don't want your teens picking up a book that isn't meant for teens.
Correct.
But I don't think I'll do that. I mean, it's taking me a while to get to where I'm at, and I'm building an audience, and I love what I'm doing. And so I've actually adapted that novel. It's completely different, but a germ of the idea and the part that I was the most excited about into a series for young adults. So I'll write it as a young adult series instead.
Because I will never write a young adult book.
Good. No, just
it's just not.
No more competition.
It's not in my genes.
you gotta love it. You've gotta love the audience. I mean, I'm gonna have teens in my household for a long time to come. So
sure.
It's kind of exciting now. I don't know, when they're all grown up, maybe it won't be as exciting. But
wait till one of your kids is about 15 or 16, and they pick up that book and read it, and they look at you and go, "Mom, seriously, you think this is how we are?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, are you kidding yourself? Well, tonight's guest has been Susie Vidori. Her book is called The Fountain. And then her second book, The Westwoods, was premiered September 22nd, available on Amazon and all the online booksellers, I'm going to assume.
Yes, absolutely.
And you want to give our guest your email and website and all that good stuff?
Sure, yeah. So you can find me on the web at susievidori.wordpress.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. I am the only Susie Vidori out there. My name is spelled Suzyvadori. So as long as you get the spelling right, you can find me.
Or they can just do a search on The Fountain.
Right.
That's true, but there are actually a number of books called The Fountain.
Oh, yeah.
But none like yours.
None like mine, but my last name is the easiest way.
Well, yes. Truly, truly. Well, Susie, thanks for giving us your time tonight, and it's just been great having you on the show. And golly, come back and visit. I mean, we are booked up through next year, into next year, right? About the first 4 months. But you can always get a hold of Jerry, who does our booking, and that's at guestwb@yahoo.com. And you know, when you're ready to come back on and subject yourself to more embarrassment, please do.
I'd love to. That sounds terrific.
And listen to the show, and you can call in. Let us know what's going on with you. The number, again, if you haven't written it down yet, is 818-602-4929. And you can call in any Thursday night, 8 to 9, your time, and we'll give you a couple minutes on the phone.
All right. I will do that.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been great having you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care.
Good night, Susie.
Good night, Susie. Bye-bye. Susie Vidori.
Wow, I like her.
Me too.
Yeah, I really do. You know, it's interesting, too, that you take a look at her book and you say, okay, both of us were sucked into, you know, at least a quarter
right.
of the book before we said, this is more for young adults. But that means that it grabbed our attention.
Right.
I knew we had to read it anyway.
Right.
But I found it really fascinating, and I did
right.
enjoy reading it.
Right. It was a good book. For all of you authors out there in listener land,
turn off my headphones?
If you are interested in being on the Writer's Block, the email address to send your inquiries to is, again, guest, as in GUESTWB for Writer's Block, guestwb@yahoo.com. And our booking manager, Jerry Christina, will be more than happy to send you an email back and let you know what's available and what's going on. And right now, I know she's not doing any booking now until the first part of December. So that being said, if you would please, that's how you'd handle it. And we, of course, will take all comers if they want to send an email to Russ or me or whomever. We'll make sure
I'm
that she gets
lonely.
It.
I'm very lonely. Please send me
but
something.
But it really is better if you send it to her directly. Now, Next week, we have Adam Dries, who is another Canadian, actually. This is like a four in a row. He's written The Yellow Hoods, The Wizard Killer, and Man of Cloud Nine. He is a, I guess they're like really straight. I don't know. I haven't even started one yet. So I guess I will. But next week is Adam Dries, and we move into, and then following month, I don't even know who's coming up.
Hey, I got a quick question.
Sure.
With Tuscany Bay Publishing.
Yeah.
Suppose there's a writer out there who has started to put stuff together on paper.
Sure.
But really doesn't have it together.
Sure.
Is this the time they should call you?
Yeah, they should.
Okay. So, because I'm just wondering, you know, you're catering more to the indie writers, right?
To indie writers and that are new time. Authors.
New.
Yes.
So that would be good to come and say, hey, I have this concept. I've been putting it together, but I don't really know what to do with it.
I don't have any idea what
to do. That's what you guys do.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Okay.
That's what we do. As a matter of fact, we're working on a book for a professor over at one of the colleges on the east side. And he is, he's a, it's a paranormal book, so we're working on that one right now. So anyway, that's going to be it for us tonight. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back next week. And Russ, thank you so much for joining
me
again
tonight. Thank you. This is fun as always.
Oh, it's been great. It's always great. And from all of us here at the Writer's Block to all of you out there in listener land, this is LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block, and we are out of here.